People First Radio is a program about people, the society in which we live, and issues related to health and wellness.
Welcome to People First Radio. I'm Joe Pugh. Trevor Botkin is drawing from his own experiences in recovery to help bring peer support to the world of construction. He's currently involved in a project called The Forge, which plans to turn an old biker clubhouse in Langford into a support space for those in the trades. According to recently released data from the BC Coroner Service, more than one in five people who died in the province from unregulated drug toxicity since 2022 worked in the category of trades, transport, and equipment operators. That number was more than double any other job category. I spoke with Botkin about plans for The Forge and his own journey of recovery.
Yeah, my name is Trevor Botkin. I'm a manager of industry relations at Construction Foundation of BC. I also am 6 years into my personal recovery journey and have done a lot of work in the last 5 years on projects across the country to bring support to men and their mental health, and especially men in construction.
And I understand that right now you're working on a project to turn an old biker clubhouse on Vancouver Island into a mental health support space. What's the story?
Yeah, so, in November, I was hired by CFBC to help build out what our response to the mental health crisis facing men in the trades is going to be at CFBC. Myself and Jenny sat down in a room and we determined that peer support was really the missing link. This is kind of the abbreviated version. Flash forward a few months, our executive director, Abigail Fulton, went and put a huge exclamation mark and bought this building. It previously was, as you mentioned, a biker clubhouse here in Langford, 2775 Spencer Road. I won't speak too much to its complicated past. I'll allow people to Google and read the news articles themselves. But this is a wonderful statement on our commitment to the mental health crisis in the trades. This space will become the new headquarters of CFBC's Forge suite of mental health initiatives. Everything from counseling to recovery coaching to social. We'll have a social opportunities for people to come together and hang out in a organized way without the presence of drugs or alcohol, for instance. That's one of the elements. But essentially, it'll become the headquarters of our larger Forge initiative, the peer support being sort of the backbone of those supports.
There are a lot of threads that came up there that I want to tug on in our conversation. Maybe a good one to start with. I think people tend to hear a lot in the headlines kind of way about there's a mental health crisis or a number of men working in the trades are experiencing substance use issues. Could you dive into what exactly that looks like for me?
Well, the recent BC Coroner's report last week just said that 21% of overdose toxic drug deaths are men in construction. That's a huge statement. I know firsthand, coming up in the industry 30 years as a carpenter and superintendent, that substance use, the relationship between tradespeople and substances, including alcohol, dates back to, I think, the advent of the first hammer. The challenge these days is with the toxic drug supply, the consequences have never come so swiftly and decisively in people's lives. Flirting with a bit of humor, like, you can't find safe drugs like heroin around anymore. I mean, the drug supply has been taken over by fentanyl from the perspective of opioids and pain management. And we know that tradespeople, they manage a lot of physical and mental injuries and exhaustion in their careers. What I saw 20 years ago was this massive intake of oxycodone in people's lives as we were being prescribed it to manage really basic injuries. And now that's graduated to fentanyl and illicit drug supply that is not giving people second chances. It's just not. The other challenge we have right now is that you have a high concentration of men. You have a high concentration of men with sort of an a worldview or an ideology, a personal ideology that is not helpful in today's environment. We have never been so connected digitally and with the phones in our pockets, but we have never at the same time been so disconnected from one another. And I think where I used to be on job sites and we had this camaraderie around each other of like I call it the band, my band of bandits, right? People that have had some adversity and seen some challenges in life all coming together to build these, to build communities and build these amazing buildings. The tough guy part was what connected us. The adversity was what connected us. But if we started to fail in that, if we started to lose our edge or come undone a little bit, that became a secret about ourselves that we really and continue to really hide from others, which is not effective in getting help, asking for help, sticking your head up. It's a huge amount of stigma. So I think when it comes to the relationship between substances and the trades, this is nothing new. The consequences are different now. When we look at the consequences, it's an illicit drug supply. We also are in an environment now in society in North America where addiction is rising. In general, mental health challenges are generally getting worse across the board. But because of this unique culture we have with men in construction and being a tough guy and the stigma that men in construction have towards health, let alone mental health, in general, is amplifying it hugely within this group.
You were talking earlier about the Forge, and you used the phrase that you think peer support is the missing link. Can you explain that?
So what I've seen in my own experience and working on projects outside, like outside of our own project, to bring awareness and support to this sector is that it ends up largely not speaking the language. We're not, they're not speaking to the guy, the boots on the ground, the men and women who are building our buildings. They're speaking to the employers. They're speaking to at best leadership to kind of expand awareness. We're using language that that just doesn't connect, doesn't resonate. We're using imagery that doesn't resonate with the worker. And one of the last projects I was on was with an organization that builds builds peer support models. I learned a lot about it. And in the tail end of working on these, supporting these other projects with my lived experience as a consultant, I get this call back 6 months to a year later saying, "We imagined we'd have more uptake. What's the problem? How, why are we not landing?" And I'm describing peer support when I give the answer. You got to speak their language. They got to respect that you've been where they are, that you've worked like they have, that you've made the sacrifices they have. Otherwise, they just don't, they can't see themselves reflected in what you're bringing them. They're just gonna ignore it. It's gonna be just something that at best they make fun of in the site trailer. And so looking at peer support, we're like, number one, if we don't connect with people, if it's not something they're attracted to, they don't see themselves reflected in. It doesn't speak their language. It doesn't meet them where they're at, like truly meet them where they're at, with an energy and a tone that is very common in the industry. Then you can have the best tool in the world. Guys just won't buy it. And so, to that end, peer support, workers with lived experience on the tools, lived experience with mental health and/or addictions, and lived experience with recovery, with having gone through it and found, a place in their lives where they have a higher quality of living. They're more contented, just a higher state of health and well-being. If we can recruit these individuals and inspire them to give back, train them to go be the tip of the spear or that missing link, I think it's the thing, the answer that makes everything else more effective, because when we're connecting with people where they're at, as people who have been there and done that before, we immediately cross that barrier of them not seeing themselves reflected in you. Them, you know, they can't. It's harder to write somebody off saying you don't understand if you know full well they've been there and they've experienced something similar to what they're going through. In the very least, they've done the job, right? Construction is not unique in the sense that it's a silo culture. It's an occupational lifestyle, much like we see with police, EMS, fire. And I think in all those different areas, we've seen that workers tend to believe that they're having a unique experience that nobody else would understand. And by the other side of that is saying, well, the rest of the world doesn't understand me and it's not made for me. And so help's got to come within the industry, and it starts at ground level with boots on the ground. And I think once we start building these connections and bridging that gap, I think naturally in my own experience, as I thought out and I start to become very aware to what else is out there in the community. I mean, I sit here 6 years into my recovery and I still have a counselor I work with. I mean, I don't think there's going to be room in my life to not have a counselor. But 6 years ago, it was very stigmatized. I mean, I could have told you what I thought about counseling, you know, and it's not fit for the radio. And so there's this space where we meet people where they're at. We walk beside them. We build a connection and we let them figure it out on their own. I mean, if you're reaching out for support or you're sitting with somebody you respect has been there, you're going to have conversations around what does better look like for me? And your mind is going to be opened to what worked for other people.
Could you tell me a little bit maybe about some of your own experiences? You just said there 6 years ago, I wouldn't have been fit to put on the radio what you thought of the idea of counseling. Was there like a turning point, or how did you get from there to having this conversation today?
For me, it was desperation. So I went into the industry at 19 years old. I like many of my brothers and sisters in the trades, I didn't do well in school. I thought very negatively about myself and had a lot of insecurities around that. I've come to learn in more recent years that I don't learn well in the conventional, traditional setting of a classroom with 30 students and doing tests and all that. And you know, I went into the industry trying to avoid going to university. I didn't want to do that. Had a lot of fear around that. Immediately fell in love in the trades. I grew up on a farm. I built a house with my parents and my family, renovated another house, had some aptitude, immediately fit in into the job site culture and immediately started excelling and getting ahead. And so that was the decision I made. Like, this is my people. I'm still to this day, all the best people I know are in construction. You know, I love the industry. I love the hard work and fell in love with it. The challenge for me is I started to build my entire identity around being a construction worker and all the stereotypes that went with it, and being a hard worker and making the sacrifices and working the 6-7 day weeks and taking on more work. And it was just endless what I had on my shoulders. And at 29 years old, I had just started my own business as a contractor. I ruptured a disc in my back, had to have my back fused. And that was the first time in my life I felt trapped, because all this hard work, you know, until that point, I was really proud of the hard work. I was really proud knowing that not a lot of people could cut it, you know, all those people that I knew that went to university and had those hoity-toity jobs, and they couldn't cut it doing what I was doing. And when I had my back fused, I was like, oh, I have to do this for the rest of my life. I've got to be this tough forever. And it was a turning point in my mental health. From that point on, I saw my addiction, what I thought to just be drugs, in the end. You know, looking back, you know, my addiction, consumption of everything from shiny things to spending money to relationships to the gym to steroids to, like, there was no end to what I would use to fill up that emptiness that started growing within me, that lack of confidence and fear of the future, of failing and not having a second. I couldn't go be a doctor or, you know, be an accountant. I knew that. So yeah, it was the industry took it took a turn for me, and my appetite for more and more work took off, because I was like, oh, I'm going to keep myself relevant. I'm going to keep myself needed. I became a man of production and was very proud of it. But inevitably I built a set of shoes for myself that was impossible to fill. I mean, they were like lead weights, and I was drowning, and my addiction, my substance use was through the roof at that point. And then, as it's I've heard it said, my whole life at that point became about getting and using drugs. That was the only thing keeping me going and allowing me to show up. So inevitably, what would try and kill me was my medicine for many years. It was it allowed me to function, to be honest. And so on March 6, 2019, I was done. I was not going to live another day feeling that way. I was so desperate. I couldn't leave my house. My addiction had taken me to basically living in my mother's basement, where I was spending every bit of money I could make on drugs, and had my poor mother convinced I was paying off credit card bills, which was not accurate at all. And I was waiting that morning. I was waiting for her to go to work. I was going to back my vehicle into the garage, and I was out of here. I was done. I'd love to tell you a romantic story about worrying about my mom fawning me, or leaving my daughters behind, or anything like that. But really, what popped into my head was vanity. I mean, I prided myself in being a hard worker. This was probably the most important part of my vision, my self-image at that point. And I thought to myself briefly, they're going to find me here. Everybody's going to find out I have this problem that I've been keeping secret for, the last 20 years of my life. And they're going to think I just gave up. And that was a bridge too far. I couldn't do that. I woke my mother up. A miracle happened. I for reasons way outside of anybody's control, I wound up in treatment the next day, in Cobble Hill, and I started getting some help. And what I thought was a drug problem, and a me being broken problem, I started weeding through all that stuff. And thank goodness, around 35, 40 days in, I started to become very aware of, how wounded I was. It wasn't that I was broken. I was wounded. I don't think anybody could have been living my life at that point the way I was and not have been in the same situation. I mean, I needed to make some changes. I could clearly see that I was not alone in the industry, that I was working with men and women throughout my career that had the same mentality and had these same challenges and were just as overwhelmed as I was. And so, coming out of treatment, I became getting involved in projects to bring awareness around this, and sharing my story, and hopefully it's made a difference. And here we are today.
What has some of that journey been like since the part where you got into treatment? Like, once that was over, the 6 years between then and now, what did that look like?
Really tough, but not as hard as it was. The hardest part is changing everything about yourself, accepting without shame, and that's my Achilles heel. Accepting without shame that the way I was living and acting and the things I believed were not they weren't okay for me. They were very tricky. And having to abandon, that self-identity. And really, you abandon it at first, and you kind of do some work around it. And there's parts of it you can pick out and say, okay, well, that was okay to a certain extent, right? So the last 6 years has really been about self-discovery, about letting go of things I thought I knew, and opening my mind to different inputs. And it's like any other thing is like, I spent the sex last 6 years being new in my own life. It's felt very weird. It's felt very disingenuine at times. I'm like, I think if you took a pro hockey player and put them and they never played soccer, and you put them on a soccer field, they're going to feel out of place. They're not going to feel like a professional anymore, and it's not going to be familiar. And to that end, I've had to spend 6 years in a space that's not familiar with me, without drugs, to cope with life. I've had to fill that void inside me with something, bigger, that has a longer lasting effect, if you will. And a lot of that is self-discovery and self-awareness and learning. Like my addictive, my addictive patterns, my obsessions are still there. They still work on me. I don't think about drugs and doing drugs as often and as I used to, and it's definitely not as intense. But man, I could still be very spontaneous and spend money when I, unthoughtfully and shiny things. I still overcommit to stuff because I've still got this part of me that tells me I'm not good enough unless I'm producing and delivering things for other people. And but that's also a space that I enjoy doing. It's part of me to want to give back and to be kind and do what I can to help others. It's just got to be, a constantly it's just constant battle of restraint and thoughtfulness around it. And I'm fortunate to have a great partner in my life who's very good at holding the mirror up to me and saying, "Hey, are you okay?" And I've got great people around me in my recovery too. That's been the other thing is like not doing everything on my own. And that's hard. I mean, that is hard to share the load when you're used to quit carrying everything yourself. But you gotta stop at the side of the road and unload all the rocks you can. There's no point in carrying that heavy backpack if there's no need for it.
You're listening to People First Radio. I'm Joe Pugh. My guest is Trevor Botkin. We're talking about the construction industry and mental health support. Botkin is 6 years into recovery from substance use addiction, and he's working on an initiative called The Forge, designed to bring peer support to people working in the construction industry. Work is underway to transform an old biker clubhouse in Langford into a physical space for The Forge. So when you're taking these experiences and these reflections and you're bringing that to other people in the world of the construction industry, how does that go? What are the messages you share and like what's the reception of them like?
Well, I've done it wrong. I've done it, I think now the last few years I've got it nailed down and what I've learned about these guys and just looking at myself too and is we've got a demographic that really responds to strength-based messaging. And I think there's a space to which this machismo, if you want to call it, or this outdated sense of masculinity, there's a place where it's unhelpful, but there's also a lot of great attributes to it. I mean, I don't want to talk anybody out of being tough on a job site and being tough and resilient in their lives. But I've approached it with language around like, you got to refuel the combat chassis. I mean, you can be as tough as you want, but if you don't put oil in the machine, it fails you. And so you can be really tough for a short period of time, or you can take care of yourself and you can be tough for a really long time. And there's no point, leaving this industry unable to walk. So we got to take care of ourselves. There's zero harm or shame in taking care of ourselves and continuing to be strong. And the message I share is, I'm 6 years into this thing, living life a new way, and I've never had a gas tank so big. I've never been more resilient. I've never been more tough. But the other side of it is, I've never been a better father. I've got this opportunity to be a grandfather now, and show up for my kids and my family in a way that I never was able to do. But it means I got to pull over once in a while and I got to check the oil and I got to do some things to keep myself grounded and to keep myself sustainable. These guys, you get a handful of them in a room and you ask them a question. If things went sideways outside of a bar one night in a back alley, can I count on you to have my back? And every one of them would tell you that they're that guy. They'll show up for you that way and say, okay, now I'm having challenges with my substance use. I'm struggling. I'm starting to drown in it. Can I count on you guys to have my back? Are you guys going to tell me to go get my crap together and sort myself out? Or are you going to say, hey, what's going on? Let's talk about this, right? And I think when I speak in those terms and frame things a certain way, these I get good reception from people. I talk a lot about this sense of masculinity and being tough, and I call it a shepherd's mindset of leadership. You can be the wolf all you want, but there's one shepherd in the field. So tell me who's tougher, the pack of wolves that doesn't want to mess with the shepherd who's protecting that flock, or the shepherd who's one person standing in a field protecting those sheep. For me, it's an easy decision. I choose to be the shepherd in people's lives and show up and look out for the my crew and the people on my crew. I take it very personal to their welfare, whether it's mental health or physical health. I want everybody around me to thrive and be okay. And to me, I think to me, in my definition of masculinity these days, that's where it is. I mean, that's strength, that's courage to stand up and be that person that can create safe places for everyone.
I have this impression that there are a number of stories, this has happened to a number of people, where someone working on a construction site has a relatively serious injury, and managing the pain from that seems to be where some issues with substance use seem to start. Is that an accurate assessment, and how do we change that?
That's one of the avenues for sure. That's one of the avenues of, especially with the opioids. There is this, like, we generally, in my experience, doctors in the past have been too quick to overprescribe very strong medications for pain. I've seen it firsthand where guys, they have a dependency now. The doctor won't give them what they need. And they'll go find it elsewhere. I mean, for a lot of us, substance use is not far away. We know where to get this stuff. And if we're not getting it from a doctor, maybe we don't want to go to the doctor. And it's just easier to get, from the illicit drug supply. But opioids are a powerful painkiller, and these jobs take the wind out of people. And they are, there's not just injuries, but this is like running a marathon every day. You got to run a marathon to take care of it, to put food on the plate for your family. And then you got to go back and do it again the next day, despite how the day before felt. And it's not a hobby. You're not a marathon runner by a hobby. This is your whole existence. And I don't think that ever changes, but I think the industry as a whole needs to inform people on better practices around managing pain. I think to myself, this beautiful organization here in BC called Pain BC, they do amazing work around coaching and helping people be more resilient and how to manage their pain. But we got to track our outputs and be more reasonable of what we're expecting from people during the week and giving them the space they need to heal. Because every time I've taken time off because of a pinched nerve or some sort of job site injury, there's a lot of pressure to get back and get back on the tools. There's a lot of pressure to return to work early. And some of that was on me. I mean, some of that was my attitude of, I'm not going to sit around. I'm fine. I just push through it, And I think, guys, if looking back, I wish I was more thoughtful. I wish I hadn't pushed myself so hard. But also, there's a lot of instances where I had to. I mean, how do you stay at home and take a week off unpaid and have your kids make the sacrifice, right?
Are there efforts going on that second front? So, like, there are things that people within the industry can do, can open up, can try and like be more aware of what's going on and maybe like their emotional well-being. But there's also the, like, I guess you would call them systemic factors of it is hard work and there are expectations, and if you don't do it, you will stop getting paid. Like, are there any changes systemically to try and address this that you're aware of?
I think the industry is waking up. I think the industry is starting to pay attention to this. I mean, I still have a variety of responses that come from industry stakeholders and employers. Some believe they don't have a single staff member that uses drugs or has mental health problems. I'm like, okay, sure. And then we've got people that are extremely proactive. I can think of Arise Construction doing great work around their mental health for their teams. There's associations out there like Vancouver Island Construction Association. Actually, they put together one of the most earliest pilot projects that continues to this day called the Tailgate Toolkit, bringing awareness to job site leadership and organizations, employers, so they can serve their teams better from the purposes of mental health and create more space for people to get help and put their hand up when they need help. There's a lot of great stuff happening. We're at a bit of a crossroads right now. We've got a bunch of guys that look like me that are about my age, 50 plus, that have a certain set of a certain ideology, worldview of toughing it out. We've also got this huge gap right now, which is affecting the industry of experience. But young people coming in, and they've got way more knowledge around their mental health than I'll ever have, just foundationally, right? And so, but along with that comes a different set of expectations. They don't want to make the sacrifices I made. They don't. They've seen their fathers and uncles and aunties, and they've seen the condition they're in at 50 years old, and they're like, no. But we've got this old guard that are like, these young guys don't want to work, and they got to pay their dues just like I did. And my answer is usually why? Why do we not want better for the people that are coming into the industry behind us? I don't think it's that they don't want to work. I think it's that they don't want to make the sacrifices that we do, and their mental health is important to them. And I'll tell you, at 50 years old, 6 years in recovery, I've outlived myself. Like, I've outlived my expectations. I wasn't supposed to be here by now. So now my health, mental health and my physical health is of great importance. And so it's hard for me to look at the younger generation and discount what they want. I think they're right. I think there's a level to which, your expectations need to be realistic, because this is always going to be a hard, very demanding job. But it's creating this tension in the industry right now that I think, I talk to guys that just don't feel like they belong in the industry anymore. They don't recognize it. Their sense of humor doesn't fit in. They'll label it as being woke and all this stuff, and which is unhelpful. And I empathize with. I feel bad, man. A lot of us knew that this is the only place we belong, and now it's changing. The expectations are different, and we have to carry ourselves in a different way. So, if I'm being empathetic, it's not like we can just choose to go elsewhere because this doesn't belong to us anymore. So there's a lot of resistance there to protect that. And also, the industry on the whole is built. It's built. The production is built on the backs of men and women with this tough person attitude. This, I'm going to go to the deep end to produce, right? And so it's in transition. It's trying to figure out what the budgets are going to look like. What does production look like? How are we going to complete projects with being a healthier place for people to be? Because there's a huge optics problem right now, where, again, young people have stereotyped the construction industry, and they're the ones that are just are there's a lot of them are just not going to have anything to do with it, which is a problem. We need about 1 million workers nationally to keep up with construction over the next 5 years between now and 2030. We're not seeing that kind of flow into the industry. We just aren't. Part of that is, the conditioning we went through in high school and junior highs to go to university and do, that's the fruitful track. But we're seeing that change now. But the industry needs to do some work around mental health and physical health and start getting things in order to start attracting the next generation into it. Sure, the next generation, you're gonna have to work hard for sure. Can't change that. But you're not wrong. You shouldn't have to make the sacrifices. Like me, you shouldn't be 29 years old on an operating bed getting your back fused. That seems ridiculous, even for me now. So it's just got to be different, and everybody's a part in it.
And I guess that brings us back to where our conversation started. The Forge is turning an old biker clubhouse into a space to kind of maybe hash out some of these issues.
Yeah, you want to talk about restorative justice or recovery? We call it the recovery of the building, 2775 Spencer Road. Very complicated history with this building. We think it's poetic that we are building this safe place within Langford that will become the hub, the center or HQ of all of our mental health initiatives for the skilled trades, transport, forestry workers, a place whether, if they're in striking distance, they can get in there to have a cup of coffee and hang out with other men and women in the industry, at a minimum. But at a maximum, they can interact with counseling. They can talk to recovery coaches to build plans around their own, recovery, whatever that looks like for them. We'll be inviting community-based recovery organizations in to do work in the space, to hold meetings, whether that's Smart Recovery or 12-step fellowships. They'll be there in the evenings running programming, maybe even a nooner, I don't know. But really, everything that goes into that building is going to be built around meeting people where they're at and supporting them to get to a place that is better for them. And we call that recovery. I don't care what your recovery looks like, as long as you can tell me you feel more content and you have a higher state of health and well-being, health and wellness, that you feel good about. We're not here to judge, but we want to help you get there.
What's the timeline? When are you hoping that the forge could be open?
So we actually secretly on the down low, I say that tongue in cheek, but we do have a couple of peer supporters up and running right now. If you visit the website entertheforge.ca, you can get access to those two gentlemen. It's more of a bench test. We're just kind of like going through the paces and getting these guys' feedback. The forge renovation, which I'm in charge of for CFBC, it's kicking off right now. So we're just any day now, I'm supposed to get the preliminary set of drawings back for our executive director to walk through and give her approval, and then we'll take it to our steering committee, which is 20 men and women from the industry, like workers from the industry, that are being called on to shape every part of this project. Renovations will kick off here as soon as we can get our permits in our hand, and we're looking to have the forge physical location done by next June. Open doors, we'll have a big groundbreaking ceremony, but our Forge Connect app, which will house be the backbone of our peer supporters, will go live in December. It'll have 12 peer supporters set up in the app. Anybody that's curious about reaching out for support or getting some guidance in their life, or asking questions, can go into the app. They can go through all the bios of every single one of our peer supporters, watch interviews with them. They can really build that connection. I know when I was into contemplation, I was consuming content over and over again as I kind of felt out, what am I going to do with this? Like, how do I get on top of this thing? So be able to choose who they want to connect with specifically and connect directly with those individuals. The app acts as that place for that connection. And then, of course, outside of the app, they can either meet via phone, video interview, or they can meet in person to talk about where they're at and start asking questions.
Is there anything else you think it's important to bring to this conversation today?
Yeah, I think if, for me, I love to tell the community that let's respect these men and women in the trades. If you know somebody in the trades, take a moment to remind them just to say, like, we understand how hard your job is. We know it must be overwhelming at times. Just start building those bridges. If you see these guys out buying their lunch at the grocery store, if you got it in you, buy their lunch for them. If not, pat them on the shoulder and say thanks for building our communities. I think a little bit of respect goes a long way. And I know myself and a lot of contractors, we grew up in the stigma that, there's this stereotype of the average construction worker. Some of it's well deserved and earned, but some of it is inaccurate and unhelpful. Let's start breaking down that. And if you're struggling, tell somebody. It's life or death. Talk to somebody about where you're at and what's going on for you, and see where that conversation goes, because there's certainly no need. In my experience, there's no need to struggle as hard as you might be.
Trevor Botkin, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Joel.
Trevor Botkin is Manager of Industry Relations at the Construction Foundation of BC. He's 6 years into his recovery journey, and we were speaking about an initiative called The Forge, which aims to make peer support available to people in the industry. Botkin and his group are working to turn an old biker clubhouse in Langford into a physical space for The Forge.
People First Radio, People First Media, and People First Stories are community media projects of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and are produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast, podcast, and social media partners.